today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast, talking about all of the best losing finalists in Survivor history, is sponsored by DraftKings.com. If football is your passion, you know all the players and the teams, their strengths and their weaknesses, between the Gary Hogabooms and the Brad Culpeppers. You know them all. Now, you can put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes that they're doling out in the Week 1 DraftKings contest, because DraftKings.com is the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week fantasy means no season-long commitment. Play whenever you want, with the players you want. Come and go as you please. Just pick out your contests, draft your players, and follow your team live. You could renew those old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove that you're the superior GM, or you can join an existing league to go head-to-head with friends, coworkers, and fantasy players from all across the country. So stop being one of these losing finalists. You could be a winner if you hurry to DraftKings.com now. Choose your players and you could take home some serious cash in week one. Use the promo code Rob and play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code Rob, that's R-O-B, to play for free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in the week one contest, only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another one of our Survivor off-season podcasts. Pretty soon it's not going to be the Survivor off-season anymore, but we've still got a couple in the tank here to go. And I'm excited to talk about this subject, which we haven't gotten into yet before in the history of RHAP. And today we're going to be ranking the losing finalists. Who are the best Survivor losers that made it 39 days, and we're going to be talking about this with the man who came up with this idea back at RehabCon back in Chicago this summer. He said, I've got an idea for a show, and now here we are. Welcome to the podcast for the first time, Azrael Rose.
Hey.
How are you?
How you doing, Rob?
Yeah, very, very good. Very happy to have you on the podcast to discuss your cumulative rankings, and then of course we'll give commentary along the way. What was it about losing finalists that really spoke to you?
So I've been a fan for a very long time, and I feel like the person that I like tends to be the person who loses in the finals. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I always pick my person, and it's Sash, it's Albert, it's somebody who played a pretty good game socially and strategically, but they just can't clinch that win. Like, there's just a part missing. And so after Spencer's loss in the finals, I started thinking, like, okay, what is it about Survivor finalists that put them in the position to where even if they played a decent enough game, or Aubrey, that they just can't take it to the end?
So you have put together a system, which we will go into, and today we'll be ranking the top 20 of those losing finalists based on your criteria of a total. How many losing finalists are there altogether?
There's 44 losing finalists so far.
44 losing finalists. So, okay. So there's only 31 Survivor winners if we don't count Sandra twice?
Correct. Yeah.
Yes. So, okay. Lots of people who are almost there probably thought that they should have won, and we'll talk through all of them here today. And again, we're going to talk through it in terms of their rankings as a player or their any other criteria.
So we're talking through their ability to stand out as a potential winner. So we're looking at them in comparison to their season, in comparison to other players who have also lost in the finals. Where do they sit next to each other? What makes Amanda better than Spencer? What makes Spencer better than Jervis? Stuff like that. And we're not just talking about what they did in the game. It's their final tribal council. It's their statistics. It's what people as jurors typically look at when they're casting their final vote. What are they saying in tribal council that they're looking for to make that decision?
All right. So do you want to talk us through your ultimate criteria? Because you did do a full breakdown of this top 20.
I did. Yes. I started thinking about, what do people say in tribal council? What are people looking at as resume builders to make this decision? So I started looking at the very obvious things, something like challenge wins, something like finding a hidden immunity idol, things that are being quantified. So what I ended up being with was driving strategy, and that is something that is not only being at the forefront of strategy, but if you're in a strong alliance, then you're just as much culpable for making it to the end as somebody who came up with the alliance and led the alliance there. Convincing final tribal council speech. So this is just watching the final tribal council and rating them on a 1 to 3 basis on, you know, are they answering the questions well, are they answering them at all in some cases?
Did you rewatch these final tribal councils, or is this all just off memory?
I went back and watched all these final tribal councils.
All right, that's the right answer.
I can tell you that it was rough, and some of them I watched twice. I have a very good working knowledge and memory of a lot of Survivor, but I don't have the memory because I was 9. You know, I watched these things when I was like 9 years old, so I couldn't remember, so I had to go back and watch them, and I used Survivor Wiki, of course, to kind of help me along the process and not have to rewatch every single season because I do remember most of it. I also took, and this is a pretty big margin of error, I guess you could say, is I counted the votes. So if somebody received a vote in the Final Tribal Council to win the game, I counted that vote.
Okay.
So somebody who almost won the game is certainly going to be higher than somebody who did not come a smidge close.
Okay, so you gave them a point for each vote they got in the Final Tribal Council.
That is correct.
Okay, got it.
I also, I think I mentioned that I gave a point for playing or finding a hidden idol. I did not, however, give points if someone played an idol on you, because that's a little bit of a caveat there that I didn't want to kind of get into.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final thing I decided to do was kind of integrating the social game. So I wanted to think, okay, how are people playing socially and how can I make that into a quantifiable number that I can attach to somebody? So that's where the votes to be voted off came into play. And I talked to people, Paul Borges would be somebody, and my friend Stephanie, and I was like, you know, what are some things? Like, this is what I'm thinking. And then looking at the correlation between somebody who is a good Survivor player and didn't get a lot of votes and somebody who's not playing well socially, they typically tend to receive more votes to be voted off.
Okay.
That's usually because they are either rude, disrespectful, not really playing the social game well. They're off themselves, so people don't mind losing them. Or they're so out of the loop in strategy that they're not able to control where the votes are going and thus are potentially in the crosshairs to be taken out themselves.
Okay. So did you deduct points for each vote they got?
I did. I took one fifth of a point away for each vote that they received prior to the final tribal council.
So you took off how many for each vote?
So each vote is one fifth of a point.
One fifth of a point. Okay. So this is going to get very, very granular at the point that we tally these results.
Yes. There's certain survivors on the list who are separated because one person played slightly better than the other person by not receiving as many votes to be voted out. However, there are instances like where people used an immunity idol to negate votes against them, and therefore those votes did not count in my tally.
Hmm. I feel like they should count, and I know you already made your list, but it's like if everybody hates one person and then everybody wants to vote them out and they played an idol, you know, everybody still wanted to get rid of them. And I feel like that should still count. So that, again, this is your list. I'm just, you know, nitpicking because that's what I do.
Yeah, sure. That's a very valid argument. What I would say to that is that if somebody is well enough rounded of a player, if we have Kelly Wentworth, who is perceptive enough to know not only that she is not in the top, but she's on the bottom and has gathered enough information to deduce that she is going home that night, I think that warrants her not receiving those votes because she was able to cancel those votes out by finding a hidden immunity idol. It's very different if somebody who didn't go home that night but was very close than somebody who found an idol and figured out that night they were going to go home. There are many players who played idols in the completely wrong way. There are plenty of people who have used advantages in the game in the very wrong way. And so they were either voted out or they could have been voted out. Why should their points count just as much as somebody who correctly used an idol and found out that information. That's where I was coming from with that.
That is a very valid counterpoint. Okay. All right. So do you want to give us any honorable mentions or anything before we get to the list?
I will say that there are certain people that I was very surprised did not make the list. Again, this isn't me personally ranking these people. I created a system, and I went through the system methodically to deduce this list. I mean, if I had my way, there are a couple people who just missed the list, and I would really – I'm sad because I really wanted to talk about these three people, and they are Don Meehan.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Fishback.
Yes. Oh, no.
I know, Stephen. And the third person is Sash Linehan.
Okay, wow. So I don't even know where to start here. Of course, we have, of course...
Dawn.
And, okay, I could certainly understand if she does not make a list of top 20 finalists of all time. But Stephen is really surprising to me. Is it just because he got no votes? Is that really what it comes down to?
That is exactly correct, Rob, and that's why I wanted to put that caveat in there when I read that I was using that, is that people automatically are going to be higher if they almost won, because if they almost won, that almost inherently means that they're a better Survivor player than someone who got, you know, nowhere near winning. Now, they may not have had the strategy that Stephen had. They may not have had the social maneuvering or manipulability that Stephen had. However, they almost won the game, so they did something right. We talk about all the time how the person who wins the game is the person who wins the game. Okay, well, in that case, if we're using that logic, then the person who almost won the game has to be certainly better than someone who did not come close to winning the game.
Maybe something that the system isn't reporting is how good the other person is next to them, especially in a final two type situation, where if Steven was in a season, if Steven's playing the same exact game in Survivor Nicaragua, does he get votes in the final three?
You're exactly right. But that can be said for winning the game as well. If you're putting somebody who is in a final tribal council against somebody else from another final tribal council, maybe they win, maybe they still lose. But that is all based off of the perception of that jury. The perception of that jury clearly didn't warrant them that win. So even though they played, you know, what could be considered a good game, it was lacking enough to where they didn't receive, not even in Stephen's case, not one vote. Mm-hmm. So he had something missing there, and that was, you know, taking JT to the end. I know that he says that was probably not what he's going to do. I know that he admitted that, or he thinks that he'd like to have thought that he would have taken JT. But let's all be honest here. If Steven is the strategist that we all think that he is, I don't think that he takes JT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it would make – Aaron was so disliked. I mean,
yeah,
it would not have made sense for him to take JT.
Okay. Well, I have to say, Azrael, I have to complete this podcast under protest here, or I will be getting a number of emails from my know-it-alls co-host the rest of the way. So I have to say, this is officially a protested podcast.
Listen, I'm fully aware and expect to be dragged for this list, Rob. It's fine. I'll say it again. You know, this was that I created that put out a result that I'm not necessarily... There are a couple people in there that I don't think that definitely didn't make my top 20 personally, but that's not what we're looking at. We're looking at creating a system to see what people value in the game, what people tend to make. These are arguments that people make in Final Tribal Council to help them win the games. They say, mm-hmm. Hey, look, I found an idol. Look, I was the driving force and strategy. Let me talk to you in Final Tribal Council, you know. All these things are things that people look at when they are making their final tribal council vote. So I tried my best to look at the same things and make it as unbiased as I possibly could. Of course, there is bias in there because it's me listening to them answering jury questions and how do I think that they did answering those questions. So there is a little bit of bias in there, but I tried my best to stay very orthodox in my system and what I thought would be a good answer, what I thought that jury member wanted to hear, and how well did they answer that question in relation to that.
Okay. And then finally, let's just stop for a moment on Sash Lanahan. I know you said that he is one of your favorite players and one of the reasons behind the genesis of this podcast. If you told me ahead of time that Sash wasn't going to make the top 20 finals list, I think I might say, okay, that makes some sense. Not really a huge shock to me. But what is it about him that really spoke to you?
So I like players who are willing to do whatever it takes to win. If I played Survivor, I know that I would be willing to sell anybody out that it took for me to get there. I would use any weapon in my arsenal to make it to the top and win. If that means convincing you to give me a necklace when I know you're being voted out, I'll do that. If it takes voting out my mom, I would do that. I would do any and everything. And I like somebody who has that fire. I don't want to see somebody necessarily play a stealthy game or play a very low-key game. While that may warrant a win, that's not the game style that I particularly like to watch.
Mm-hmm.
As a viewer, as you know, thinking about strategies with that, of course, I understand the underlying exemplariness of it. Exemplariness. However, I'm looking at this as two different things. What my favorite player is very different sometimes than who I think deserves to win the game. Do I think that Sash should have won in Nicaragua? I certainly think that he had merit to win, but Fabio bulldozed his way to that end by winning those immunities. They couldn't get rid of him. And then he turned around and showed them his heart.
Mm-hmm.
He turned around. He even, you know, God, Nayanka and him did not have a very good relationship throughout the course of the season. He got her vote.
Yeah.
I love Sash. I love that he was so greasy and slimy, willing to make some really bold statements and some really bold moves. He burned people, and he didn't care because he wanted to get to the end, and he did that.
The problem is with a lot of these people that we're going to talk about here that they wanted to get to the end so bad they didn't care how they got there. And ultimately, that's why they're on this list and not the list of the best winners. So let's get dive in, okay? Let's go in from number 20. Who's number 20 on the list?
Let's start off with a tie.
A tie. Wow. Ty Trang?
No. Oh. Ty did not even come close to making the top 20.
Oh, what a disaster.
I can't even say anything about it. What could have went wrong? Okay. At 6.6 points, Stephanie LaGrossa, 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
Susie Smith, tie for number 20.
Okay, well, where do you want to start?
Let's start with Stephanie, just because I named her first.
Okay, so you're breaking the tie. You're putting Susie at 19 and Stephanie at 20.
Yes.
Okay. All right, there you go. There you have it. Stephanie LaGrossa, 2.0. Stephanie.
Stephanie... in her final tribal council and throughout the game, she burned so many people. And if you watch the final tribal council, she's almost unaffected. Like, she just comes off as very cold. She does not seem apologetic whatsoever. She's sitting next to Danny, and Danny's like, I'm sorry. Like, that's just kind of what I thought I had to do. I was the last surviving member and all this other stuff. And Stephanie's like, yeah, I burned you. But I don't regret anything that I did. And I would do it all over again. Like, that's not appeasing somebody who's on the jury. Like, these are supposed to be your friends. Like, you owe them an apology. You owe them an apology and an explanation as to how you came to that point. And she did a really bad job at making that happen.
So Stephanie only gets the one vote from Rafe at the final tribal council. Was that a case of did Danny win it at final tribal council or did Stephanie lose it at final tribal and over the course of the post-merge?
Oh, Stephanie lost it. Because Stephanie's whole alliance was on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
The people that Stephanie was working with, she made enemies of them by playing the I'm your best friend card and then turning around and stabbing them in the back.
Yeah.
And it's like somebody, I don't remember who said this, but somebody was like, why did you feel it was necessary to buddy up to people as they were going out the door?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of saying something perceptive and being like, well, you know what? You're my friend. You're my friend. I wanted you to have a good last couple days. You know, it was my strategic play to get you out of the game. And that's what I wanted to do as a friend. And I hope we could be good friends after this. Instead, she was just kind of like, well, I don't like conflict. And so I just wanted to make you believe that we were still good friends, even though I was voting you out, so that I didn't have to deal with the repercussions.
And she definitely had some entitlement along the way as being the returning player. She felt like it was her season to win here in Guatemala. And then here comes Danny, the stealth bomber at the end. Do you agree with the placement of Stephanie at number 20 on this list?
I think it's close. I think she could maybe be a little bit further up the list. And I think that if I were to switch out some of the people I wanted to switch out, maybe she would kind of stay around the same area that she is.
Okay.
Going back to your point about, you know, feeling entitled, she felt entitled about coming back as a returning player. However, when asked to nullify somebody's vote, she chose Bobby John. Mm-hmm. So if you think that you did a good job at making it as far as you did and you thought you were going to be gone, and why wouldn't you give Bobby John the same credence and be like, you know what, you made it to the jury. I wouldn't take away your vote. I would take away this other person's vote, who clearly like has a less chance of voting for me because we have, you know, no communication or something.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It was just interesting. Her, she just comes off as cold. She doesn't answer the questions particularly well. She recognizes that she stabbed people in the back, but she doesn't apologize. She doesn't give them anything to leave with a good feeling about her when they're casting their vote. And that's the most important thing. They still have the same thing about her. They're still like, okay, well, she burned me. Like, why should I vote for her?
It's a tough spot to play that game where you're the person who's calling all the shots, and then you sit there at the end and then you ask the people that you got rid of from your group to vote for you have to be particularly skilled and also sit next to somebody who the rest of the group feels is undeserving. That's really the other key part of this. If you have somebody who's like, okay, I could live with that person beating me, then you get a 6-1 vote like this.
Right. Or, you know, you look for a reason to vote them out. There have been countless cases. You know, Tony's a great example. He looked for a reason to get rid of LJ. He said, LJ, who do you want to, let's take out, he didn't say let's take out Wu, but he basically got LJ to admit or say that he would be willing to take out Wu, and then use that against him to say, okay, well, let's take out LJ because he's clearly not on board with us, and that makes him not part of the team anymore. And that is a way that you can say at the Final Tribal Council, well, you were willing to go against the Alliance, and I didn't want you to come after me, so, you know, I took the opportunity.
You ready to talk Susie?
Yes, let's talk Miss I Tried.
She did try. Susie tried, and she got to the final three.
And I tried very hard to sit through this Final Tribal Council and not put the fan blade from my fan to my face, because that's pretty much how I felt. It was a complete disaster. It was hard enough watching Sugar tank her own game, because she should have won. But then to have Susie next to her and think, like, Susie should be on the Millennials tribe. They should have brought Susie back as a Millennial, because she thinks she deserves a gold star for putting in effort. It's like, you know what? We give medals to everyone these days. If you were a part of it, you get a medal. I was a part of it. I'm sitting up here, so you should vote for me. Like, that's not logical.
Yeah.
It's not a good way to try and say, you know what? I know that Sugar was running the game and had all the strategy, but I never gave up. That was her argument. I never gave up. No. Nobody ever came after me, but I never gave up.
Okay, Susie did get 3 votes against Bob's 4. She got the Maddie, Ken, and Crystal vote, and unfortunately, she was this close in the 4-3 vote, losing to Bob. Could you imagine? I mean, really, Susie, one vote away from being a Survivor winner.
Isn't that crazy to think about? Like, it's so situational on who you're sitting next to and what season you're playing into and how this all plays out. Because in any other season, does Susie even make the merge?
Right. Like, right.
So forgettable. She's so bump on a log or on a tree stump. It's crazy that she even makes that far. Surprisingly, the votes that Susie got should have gone to Sugar. Those are the 3 votes that I really thought Susie had the best chance of getting. Those are the best. At least Crystal and Ken, like, those are the kind of people that she played with the best, in my opinion. And those are the people that gave her the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I guess Maddie did too. And I like how in Maddie's thing, he's like, is that it? Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
okay, like, they were looking for a reason to give it to Sugar, but Sugar was, I'm sorry, we're going into Sugar Land here, the Sugar Shack.
Well, give me the spoiler. Is Sugar going to make the top 18?
Sugar does not make the top 18.
Okay. just checking. I didn't think so.
No pumpkin.
No, definitely not. And she didn't want to. Like, it's so obvious in the Final Trouble Council. She was so apropos about everything. She was like, like, whatever. You know, you do what you want to do. Like, it's your jury vote. Like, she didn't fight for it. She didn't try. Mm-hmm. Susie tried. She was just very willy-nilly, Hans, about the whole situation. And that's so disrespectful to somebody who's on the jury to sit there and be like, well, I don't really care if you vote for me or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. She's taking their power away, and that is not a good way to go. All right. Well, we're just going to make ourselves crazy trying to figure out anything that happened in Gabon.
Yeah. Let's not revisit that ever again.
Okay. All right. Let's keep moving. What about number 18 on the list?
Number 18. Oh, my heck, it's Nalia Dennis.
Oh, Nalia, who, of course, sat in the end with Vesepia, as we all remember.
You are both the epitome of what this great country of ours has to offer.
Most of us try to forget.
Yes.
Maybe not God, but everybody else.
All right. So look, bring back Nalia, number 18 on the list.
Let's not bring back Nalia or Pascal.
Oh, come on. Come on. Why? What do you have against Nalia?
I'm not on that train, Rob. First of all, Nalia and Vesepia were so bad in this final tribal council speech. Mm-hmm. It was very clear that nobody wanted to vote for them. And I know that that's been recounted throughout the history of Survivor.
Yes.
It was awful watching them try and talk about their strategy. And Nalia did not take the cues from the jury whatsoever about owning her game, owning her moves, owning the fact that she didn't play with morals and values that she, you know, kind of preached to everybody else throughout the season. Mm-hmm. She didn't do that. And she was shaking her head and unwilling to be like, you know what? I believe in my faith. And, you know, although I may have tried, none of us are perfect. I failed. I'm sorry for that. You know, I made mistakes.
Yeah.
She was like, well, you know, if I had to make one change in my game, I guess I wouldn't go with Vesepia to the end. I guess I would have gone with Sean. And that's pretty much where the only mistake I think I made. Like, mm-hmm. they gave her the opportunity to talk about the things that she did. And she completely blew them off and just said, you know, I tried. You know, I tried to play with morals and values, and that's what I did. And I believe at least Vesepia had something clear in her mind to kind of say, I had a strategy. I went by my strategy. I didn't just end up here. Yes, I mean, she didn't really own up to being a flip-flopper, but she was like, you know what? I didn't lie, but, you know, if I changed my mind, it was because I felt I had to. And I couldn't even say that for Nalia because she was just so bland.
Not Jeffra bland. That Nalia also, she's talking a lot about how she didn't really play the game before. I forget if it was like day 23 or day 24 before they ultimately had the vote where John went out. I think that was a little damning too.
Yeah, I mean, she says it three times. She's like, I didn't start playing this game till day 24, as though it's a badge of honor to be like, you know what? I'm not as at fault as Vesepia,
right?
Because I wasn't even playing the game as long as Vesepia. It's crazy to think that she thought that would, I have to imagine she thought that would be some kind of like, oh, I turned my game around at day 24 and that's when I really started playing hard. But like the way that she says it doesn't come off that way. It comes off as I sat around and did nothing for 24 days and then I kind of just sat here some more and went along with whatever I thought was going to be good.
Yeah. And she still got three votes.
Because who do you vote for in this situation? Like, do you vote for Vesepia or do you vote for Nalia? Like, it's really just a matter of taste, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that Kathy had an anti-V vote and Pascal had a pro-Nalia vote. And Zoe, I think, had a pro-Nalia. Who knows what Zoe does?
No, Zoe.
Nobody
well,
knows.
It was so hard watching them, and they were all just so over it. So, like, really just bummed that they had to vote for either one of them.
Yeah, what are you going to do? All right, well, let's talk about number 17 on the list. Who is the number 17 best losing finalist in Survivor history?
The number 17 person comes in at 6.9 points. And not my bae, but John's bae. It's Jacqueline Schultz.
Oh, Jacqueline Schultz. All right.
I got you there for a second, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Jacqueline and her resume, because, you know, I don't think we really considered her a serious candidate at any point to win in San Juan del Sur. But make the case for Jacqueline as the 17th best juror in, I'm sorry, 17th best finalist in Survivor history.
You know, I think that Jacqueline had a shot to win. Okay. However, Jacqueline was tied to John in such a strong way. And it's really crazy because if you think about it, all of John's friends are on the jury. Mm-hmm. And he still couldn't get them to vote for her.
Yeah.
So the power structure in their relationships was viewed so one-sidedly that they couldn't respect Jacqueline's game, in my opinion. And the chances that she had in Final Tribal Council to illuminate how she was playing the game without John, she didn't really use to her best benefit. I know John asked her a question. He's like, you know, what move did you do by yourself in this game? And she's like, well, you know, it was my idea to get Josh out. And, you know, it was her idea, but it was her emotions that kind of led that. And had she done something like, I really think she should have painted John into a corner. I think she should have said, you know what? Regardless of the situation, I'm going to get John's vote. Let me put all the heat onto him. Let me talk about how I am the master of our relationship, how I controlled John to do what I wanted to. Whether that would have worked, I don't know. However, it looks better than her playing second fiddle to John. Mm-hmm. She was never able to break that stereotype of what people believed about her. People just thought that she was tagging along with whatever John wanted to do, and then she kind of just makes it there, and then Natalie saves her at the end there. Like, she never gave a compelling reason as to what she did in the game other than being in the middle mm-hmm. to warrant the victory, while Natalie sitting next to her clearly has things that she's done. Clearly, Jacqueline knows that she saved her. Why did she not throw Natalie underneath the bus? Why did she not use that and say, okay, they just saw this two tribal councils ago or whatever. Like, why don't I bring that up, talk about how I convinced her to do that, or talk about how, you know, my gameplay made that happen. All she did was say, you know what, if I didn't make the flip that I did, like, Natalie and Missy wouldn't be sitting here. That's probably accurate, but that's not a compelling way to portray the scenario. She needed to go vote by vote and say, this is what I did in the game. After John left, this is who I went to. This is how I rallied the vote to get this person out. This is what I was thinking. I did this by myself. And she didn't do it. She had no cutthroat ability. And Natalie just had Jeremy on her side. Mm-hmm. She had big moves under her belt that she could point to. It was never going to work.
Yeah. I think at some point, though, you're asking Jacqueline to not be Jacqueline. I don't know how necessarily, like, Jacqueline turns into sort of like this stone cold, you know, cutthroat person at that final tribal council.
Well, I think that that's the time to do it. Like, you don't have to. I don't think that you have to be stone cold and cutthroat to talk about what other people did badly. That's all I'm asking for. Just talk about how, okay, if you played the flip to get out Josh. Okay, so talk about where Natalie was and where Natalie went from there.
I kind of feel like once you open that can of worms with Natalie, she's just going to, like, put Jacqueline in the ground in terms of just, like, slamming her.
But Natalie's game had already done that. Mm-hmm. Like, people were already aware that Natalie had made some big moves. She talked about how she probably should have been the one to be voted out the night that Keith was voted out. They are somewhat aware of what she's been doing already. So why not just go for broke, try and bury her as best as you can, and just hope that it works? Okay. Maybe it doesn't, but it looks better than just sitting there and trying to be like not the almost like trying to be not the victim. No, I was a strong woman. I did make my own moves. I have MKBH, whatever she has. And mm-hmm. It was kind of a pity party. Like, instead of being like, no, I was a strong woman, John held on to me. I took us for the ride. I decided to make the flip for this reason and go from there. And she didn't do it.
All right. Well, let's talk about number 15. And who is your number 15 best losing finalist?
Well, there isn't one. There are two.
What? Oh, okay. All right. So it was a tie at number 14?
With 7 points, Lisa Welchel and Amanda Kimmel 1.0.
Okay. All right. So who you got? Who's split the tie for us?
Oh, Amanda over Lisa any day.
Okay. So, all right. Let's talk about Lisa Welchel first. And I actually, when I rewatched Philippines for Evolution Strategy, I didn't think that Lisa Welchel was that bad.
She wasn't.
Yeah.
She really wasn't. And in her final tribal council, she wasn't half bad either.
Okay.
It really just came down to her game was, I'm a good person and I want to play this game the good way. I don't really know what I'm doing, but you know, I had this big secret that I was carrying around and I didn't tell anybody and I was there. She does do a good job of kind of standing up for herself and being like, well, I was vocal during the tribal council. Like, I'm the one who's saying, let's go with plan B. When she got called out for kind of being a follower,
mm-hmm.
she was like, well, you know, I'm the one who stood up and said, let's go with plan B. Like, we had a plan B. You know, you weren't in our alliance, so it still made sense to vote you out. Like, those are strong things that she did. Mm-hmm. And watching it, I was a little surprised as well to remember that.
So she did a pretty good job. I think that, you know, just the emotional roller coaster on the way to that point, I think really did not sit well with the jurors.
No, and Denise's game was so hard compared to Lisa's. Yes, you know, Lisa had the secret, but Denise went to every final tribal council. Denise was on 7,000 different tribes. Denise had to play in a way that made her be in so many different alliances and good with so many different people that it almost had to come across to the jury as like, oh, this person like did a good job at being active around camp, good in the challenges. We wanted to keep her. You know, she made it through the gauntlet. And how can Lisa or Scoopin kind of compete with that resume that she had built for herself? And she did a good job of explaining it. She did a good job of being like, yes, I'm a therapist. I listened very well. I found myself, you know, in situations and made judgment calls. I made good alliances. Like, Lisa didn't do a bad job. She just didn't do as well as Denise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that she got lumped in with Scoopin, and having Penner on the jury was not good for either one of them, I don't think.
I'll bury both of you right now. Lisa, right. You've got some secrets. And Mike, from what I'm hearing, you've got some too.
And they didn't own up to, again, this goes into like, tell us what you did bad. Tell us how you played your heart out. Tell mm-hmm. us how you made strategic decisions that moved you to the end that were not only thought out, but you are taking ownership for them. And I think that they kind of had the perception of shucking that ownership off in some senses. Whereas Denise was like, I did do these things and that's what I had to do because I was the underdog and I was the only one from, you know, this alliance and I took out Malcolm. And how can you compete with that if you're Lisa or Scoopin?
All right. Well, then you said this was Amanda Kimmel 1.0 that's tied with Lisa Welchel?
Correct. And Amanda Kimmel 1.0, China.
Okay. Interesting. So the fans versus favorites Amanda is the better Amanda finalist. I'll assume that she is also on this list. So let's talk about China Amanda.
Amanda is probably one of my top five favorite players. I'll start with that.
Okay.
I love Amanda. I think that she does a great job in the game. Clearly, we all know that she is not very good at being good under pressure.
Well, of course, you love all of these losing finalists, and she's like the patron saint of losing finalists, no?
She really is. Like, she could have won China. Like, she was so close, and she was so in-depth with Todd and their moves that really they played a very similar game. It's kind of semantics and how they were different. And Todd just buries her in the final tribal council and how he explains what he did and how it got him there. Whereas Amanda could have used the James blindside more to her advantage. I think that if you're voting out somebody with two idols in the pocket, that is risky. It could have come back to bite her in the butt. Mm-hmm. She didn't articulate that. She didn't articulate anything very well. And that, I think we all know, is what kind of sunk her ship. And her positioning in the final tribal council was so... she would look like one of those dogs off of the PETA commercials. She was so... She was looking down. She was not strong or proud or any of the things that we would associate somebody with being happy with the way that the game turned out for them. She looked like somebody just killed her dog.
Oh, no. All right. Well, so many dog references there for Amanda in the final tribal council.
I know, and I love cats.
Kat Ederson?
Yes, I love Kat. Don't even get me started on Kat, because I love Kat Ederson.
Yeah.
All right. She is hilarious. I love watching her. She's great.
Do you feel like outside of what Todd did so well that there was enough that Amanda could have done to be able to overcome that deficit? Because it's not just that she did poorly, but Todd really nailed it.
Todd really nailed it, and he really... But it's hard to delineate the difference between them because Amanda did a lot of the groundwork for Todd to do what he did. Mm-hmm. But she did such a bad job of explaining how Todd would not have been able to do anything that he did if I didn't do the work for him. I was the workhorse. I was the man behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. I was pulling the strings with everybody else so that we could pull these things off. And Todd was just the one kind of playing orchestra master, whatever those people are called, mm-hmm. like the conductor, he was conducting because without my social game, you know, we wouldn't be able to pull off those moves.
All right. Well, let's talk about number 14. Who is number 14 in the rankings?
Number 14 is somebody who was a very big upset for me. And I think a lot of people, that is our reigning losing finalist, Aubrey Bracco.
Okay. Now I'm actually surprised to see her so low here in the rankings, only number 14, where I feel like that people, I feel like, have said that she is one of the best losing finalists. So explain to me, why is she all the way down here at 14?
Aubrey absolutely is one of the best losing finalists. However, she just didn't get enough votes, and she did not get enough community wins. That's what it comes down to. When you're talking about a resume of somebody who has won Survivor, who is in the finals, you want to talk about, oh, I won this many challenges, and I was out there doing the strategy, and I was finding idols and doing all these crazy blindsides and stuff. Whereas with Aubrey, first of all, I'll say that I go back and forth. I think that Michelle deserved to win because she got those people on her side to vote for her, however she did it. Mm-hmm. I still think that Aubrey was robbed in a sense that I don't think that the guys were ever going to vote for her. Like, I just think that they didn't respect or understand how hard of a game that she played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it comes from those particular guys, especially Scott and Jason, like, they are kind of like meatheads, and the emotional connections that Aubrey built and the strategic avenues that she was building is kind of lost on people who have that kind of sentimentality. Like, if you're used to kind of just bulldozing your way, you don't understand the fine finesse that it takes to subtly influence people and make a good connection and just have them want to do what you tell them to do.
I'm really surprised to see Aubrey still. It seems too low.
It really is. And when we get to some of the people who are above Aubrey, it really is kind of a disgrace that she's so low. But with her, she had a lot of votes counted against her. She had 8 votes cast against her during the season, whereas some of the other people who may or may not have been goats or mm-hmm. people who are viewed as goats were still in the majority and therefore didn't have as many votes cast against them. Like, there's a lot of kind of like subtleties of this ranking system that kind of put somewhere. There's 5 people on this list who I think probably shouldn't be on there. Mm-hmm. And there's probably 4 or 5 people who I would absolutely trade up to be on the list.
All right, let me ask you this question.
You know, 3 of those were, you know, Don Sash.
If Neil Gottlieb got to cast his vote for Aubrey, where would she land in the rankings?
If Neil casts his vote for Aubrey, she goes up a full point. She moves up 5 spots.
I feel like maybe that's a flaw there, where that she had a vote canceled against her.
Mm-hmm.
People are so bunched up here. I feel like that Neil vote should count. But okay, for the time being, Aubrey, number 14 in the rankings. Now, before we get to number 13, we have seven people you've mentioned, all women. Now, is this some sort of statistical anomaly, or are most of the best losing finalists women?
A lot of finalists are women. Women tend to be taken to the end,
yes,
over a man.
Okay.
A lot of men don't want to go against another guy, or they're just viewed as more of a threat and challenges, so they're taken out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons why that is. I mean, we can point right to Survivor Amazon and why there was two women in the end instead of Rob.
Wait, hold on. Are you throwing shade at poor Mateo?
Sadly, Mateo did not make the list, yeah, but I wish that he had, just so that I could hear some more of your... I recently rewatched the Amazon, and it's fantastic. Oh my God. It was just comical. Like, the editing and like what they were putting in the shows was just so bizarre and just very like kind of like some of those Big Brother edits we see.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, you know, I feel like we have a good account on like Big Brother in terms of the times of like when it's men and women in the finals and how that tends to always be going in the favor of men in the Big Brother finals. But I think that might be a good project to do coming out of this in terms of the male-female splits on Survivor, how many times it goes the direction of one gender versus the other. And if it's like two women and one man in the finals, like in Survivor Karamoan, how many times it goes in the favor of the one male as opposed to another time, like in South Pacific, where it's one woman and two men, it goes in favor of the woman. So I'm interested to see how that plays out in terms of the Survivor breakdowns.
Yeah, that would be a totally interesting podcast to do because all these things are so relationally divisive. It's so interesting how things operate and how it changes from season to season or doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bizarre. Like, a lot of these people have very similar resumes when it comes to being in the finals, like having, you know, one immunity or no immunities, having one vote in the final, kind of being a part of an alliance that kind of dominated, but not really being at the forefront, having an okay final. Like, it's very, there's a lot of the same in those instances where it's kind of funny because we don't have enough people who really go back and watch what people are doing right and doing wrong. And that's one of the reasons why probably the impetus of me coming up with this podcast was for anybody who ever wants to play, are you going back and watching this stuff? Like, you should be doing your research. You should be doing your homework.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that you can learn from, not necessarily going into like a super fan like Cochran, Aubrey, Steven tailspin where you're thinking about it too much maybe, but having a working understanding of like, okay, well, this is how the social dynamics tend to be leaning in this game. This is how it works if I take this person on reward challenges. Like, do I want to leave these group of people together, or how do I do this? Like, there's a lot of things that you can learn.
So let's get to number 13. What do you got?
One of the aforementioned substitutions that I would probably make if I had my way.
Okay.
This is a Dirty D. That's Danielle DiLorenzo from
Panama.
Okay,
double D. No, don't make her Dirty D.
Dirty D. I like Dirty D because her scuffle with Amanda in Heroes versus Villains.
Yes.
I like that. I like that move by Amanda, but it was great to see Danielle fight for it too.
Okay. All right. So
I don't have a lot to say about Danielle. I don't really care for her all that much. And I don't think that she really had a lot to warrant her spot.
Why?
Here.
Why are you so anti? Because you love Amanda so much and she wrestled the clue away from her in Heroes versus Villains.
Well, we're still not fact checked on if she wrestled it away or if production or Colby was like, just give it back to her. Like, I'm not exactly sure what happened there.
But that's why you hold that against Danielle?
I didn't like her in Panama. I didn't like her in either.
She's
of her
the
seasons,
captain
but.
Of sports.
Oh, it's awful. Like, I don't like people who go into Survivor just being athletic and having that be their moniker that they wear. They're like, oh, I'm athletic, so
moniker
I'm
Culpepper?
Yes. Like, I'm not a fan of that kind of gameplay. Like, that's not how it should be played.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I can't say that that's my favorite thing in the world. So what did Danielle do well here? I mean, she gets to the finals against Aris. You know, I don't know where to put this thought out there, but I was a total aside, and I'm sorry it's about Big Brother. Sorry for to get some Big Brother in your Survivor podcast, everybody. What do you think of this analogy of Aris and Vetus to Cody and Paulie from Big Brother?
Ooh.
I'll let the people at home think about that. I think that's a pretty similar comparison. All right. So then all right, let's go back to Double D.
Oh God. She didn't even like win necessarily a lot of things.
Then how does she get to number 13 in the rankings? She doesn't get voted for a lot?
So she does have a pretty strong alliance. You know, I think she was partnered up with, you know, the Suri contingent there.
Mm-hmm.
Final Tribal Council was just kind of neither here nor there. She did well enough to get, you know, 2 points, but she didn't really take it there for me. Like I said, I like people who really fight for it. I like when you're making strong arguments. You're laying out your case. You're talking about your game in a smart, sensible manner where you understand why the moves you made were made and how they affected the course of the game.
Mm-hmm.
She does receive 2 votes in the end, and she wins that immunity challenge. And I guess something I didn't talk about, she does win an extra point for having made fire against somebody. I gave points for fire.
Yeah.
Just as another way to break up the kind of big group in the middle, I was like, you know what? If somebody makes fire against me in a Final Tribal Council and demonstrates that ability, I guess that's better than somebody who doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, kind of a skill that you could showcase and say, oh, I made fire. I beat that person.
Yeah.
So I gave her an extra point for that.
Okay. All right. Well, there's Double D at number 13. And all right, number 12 in the rankings. Who you got?
Number 12 is somebody else who I probably wouldn't have near the top 20. That's Kim Johnson.
Kim Johnson. Wow. Mama Kim. And the trend continues. More women here in this top 20. All right, so Kim Johnson, who I don't think she gets voted for too much during Survivor Africa, but doesn't really go on too big of a run with the immunities. I think she does win the final immunity, which is how we get into this predicament. So how is Kim Johnson so high in the rankings?
So she gets 2 votes in the end.
Yes.
She also does win 2 immunity challenges. She is part of the controlling alliance in Survivor Africa. And of course, it was much different going back through the first, let's say, 12 seasons where there weren't idols and all these game-changing things going on, because everything was a lot more relationship-based. It was a lot more what you did around camp. It was a lot more like how that person was as a person in their life, which got them far. Her getting here wasn't necessarily because she did all that much in the game. She only got 1 vote against her cast against... or 1 vote cast against her the entire season, which I guess is reputable.
Mm-hmm.
Her final tribal council is, again, neither here nor there. I'm pretty sure she played the mom card, the sweet woman. And that archetype has been discussed heavily, I think. So I didn't really think, you know, for me, she doesn't merit a spot in the top 20 because she didn't do a lot in the game, playing the game. But then I guess if we're looking at the game back then and how it was, maybe... she did.
Yeah. I mean, she sort of kept her nose clean and didn't make a lot of enemies along the way. Won a couple of challenges, but kind of a, you know, milquetoast sort of person in the finalists. Kind of like, I sometimes forget about her as a Survivor finalist.
I could not tell you a lot about her final tribal council speech. It was very hard to watch. It wasn't hard to watch because it was boring.
Yeah.
Like the other ones that I've mentioned were hard to watch was because they were so bad.
Yeah.
Hers was just kind of like dragging on. I was like, clearly Ethan is going to win. Like, there's just no shot.
Mm-hmm.
There tends to be a very strong trend among people who kind of make it very far in the game. It's like you said, keep your nose clean. Don't lie too much when it's unnecessary. Don't be malicious towards people. Win an immunity or two here or there. Be part of the group, but maybe don't be the most vocal person. Like, there is a roadmap that you could take to make it far in Survivor for sure.
So let's go ahead and get to number 11 on the list. Who you got?
I already know that number 11 is going to be very contentious because I was a very big fan of, I recently, before I started watching Amazon, I rewatched this season, and I was not only surprised by how well I liked this person, but how well I thought they did in the game. And I just don't see where people think the winner was so hyped up as he has become. And that, with that, I guess we're going to take a turn towards the North Pole and, into the Iceman's territory. It's Clay Jordan.
Clay Jordan. Interesting. The number 11 best losing finalist. Now, all right, talk this through with me. I think that this is going to be a head scratcher for a lot of people.
It is. And it's surprising, but if you go back and watch the season, or even if you just look at the numbers here, he does have a strong alliance. He has a strong pull and where the votes are going, he's the one kind of making the dirty moves and kind of going after people in a very well-shown way. Whereas Brian was very kind of Mr. Smooth and under the radar, in my opinion. He wins that one immunity. I think it was the memory challenge that he won.
Mm-hmm.
He gets 3 votes in the final tribal council, and he doesn't do half bad in his final tribal council speech.
Does it go great? I feel like that there's a lot of both of these guys are really wrestling with a lot of charges that are thrown at them.
Yes, and I think that he does a decent job at explaining his game, and also the fact that he was kind of out on Front Street. Like, Brian was the one who had good relationships with everybody, while Clay, I think, was the much more contentious player. Much more the player where people were kind of looking at him and knowing they knew that he was kind of a scoundrel. They knew that he was not playing in their best interest. And yet he stuck around. They kept him. He was able to pull off some good moves by working with Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And why should Brian, in my opinion, get the glory of being, the Iceman when Clay was, again, the more vocal participant, the more willing to be that cutthroat assassin. He didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And he was proud about it. Now, maybe that's what lost him the game. And Brian, kind of being more the family man and having more close-knit relationships with some of the people there was what won him the game. But I think Clay deserves a lot more credence than we give him.
Yeah, he only lost by 1 vote. He was right there, but it just felt like that Brian just had the whole thing on lockdown.
But he was well aware, I believe, if I remember correctly, he knew that Brian was doing well. That's a sign of a good player when you know that if you think that you're so good that you don't have a shot at being voted out or you don't have a shot at losing, I think that kind of brings a lot of ego into the table. And that, to me, shows somebody's ineptitude when it comes to Survivor, thinking that they've got it in the bag. This person is no threat to me. I can say this or that. Like, he was well aware that Brian was doing well and that Brian was making good relationships. And I'm pretty sure, if I recall, he tried to go after Brian at one point and failed. I still think that he did well in the game. And I would even say that I would like to see him play again.
You want to see Clay Jordan back? Wow.
I do.
That's a hot take. I don't think anybody's ever said that before, other than Clay Jordan.
If we're going to bring back Jervis, and if we're going to bring back Michael Scoopin, or I don't even know, like, I'm not going to name some of the new people that they have been bringing back. Like, I think that he was willing enough to make the moves. And in this day and age where the game moves so quickly and people are playing such a, I don't want to say dirty game because I don't think it's dirty. I think it's aggressive would be the word that I'd probably use. I think I would like to see if he still has that fight in him and how he's able to adapt what he was already trying to do in his season and bring it to the new seasons. Because I think that he would probably be right along with them.
All right. Well, Clay Jordan has his number one advocate supporting him to come back to Survivor. All right, well, that's the hottest take we've had here so far through halfway through the list. All right, we've got our bottom half of the top 20. Now we move into the top 10, baby. All right, who's number 10? The number 10 best losingest finalist.
Well, baby, I'm glad that you said that because it's our friend Carolyn Rivera.
All right, Mama C. Yeah, not Paulie and Cody's mom, a different Mama C. And here she is. Yeah, baby.
She's yeah, baby.
In the top 10. Somebody who was kind of under the radar most of the way, but then kind of had like a strong showing there. A lot of people forget she was in the mix. She could have been a second chancer, baby.
She really could have, and I think that it was certainly warranted. You know, had Mike lost one of those immunity challenges, Carolyn wins the season.
Probably. And still an upset that she didn't get voted in, considering that she was on the season that was airing. Like, you would think she would have been one of the biggest shoo-ins, baby.
Well, I think that her attitude is what kind of lost her some votes there. I don't know that she would have won, but I think that she came off cold and distant and didn't play a very buddy-buddy game. She was kind of like, she was in the strategy. She was making moves. She had her idol. She got a vote. She got a vote at the end. Her final tribal council was fine. Like, it was pretty good. She got 5 votes against her the whole season. She did make fire. Like, she did stuff in the game. And if we recall back in the beginning, how vocal she was during that vote against So, where she almost goes home. Like, mm-hmm. She really went to bat for her life. And that's the kind of attitude that you need to have when you're trying to make these strong pushes towards the end. And she really did have it. I just think that she was left there. What numbers did she have in her back pocket to where she could make it to the end and win against some of them? Like, the only shot she would have had was to go along with some of the stuff that Mike's doing if he's winning the immunity challenges and take out some of these other people to hopefully get to take him out at Final Four.
Right. She's in a tough spot in that season because she realizes that, you know, these guys that she's with don't really want her in the end. And she could go with Mike, but she knows she can't beat Mike in the end. So she's really sort of, you know, stuck in between a rock and a fan favorite in Sierra Dawn Thomas. And she doesn't know which way to go. Like, she doesn't have a lot of moves.
She is a good person who I think could have won, probably would have won if Mike wasn't there, and probably could have done better had she had better relationships with people on the jury. And really, like, Mike's showing was just so stellar that I don't know that even like that could have won over anybody mm-hmm. over Mike, because he just worked so hard and he was a good enough person that they felt okay voting for, even though he had a little hiccups along the way.
Yeah. And I think that that's sort of like a nice spot to be in when you can just sort of like immunity your way to the end. And then you weren't really the person who was backstabbing down the stretch. I think that that really is a point in your favor when you get to the final tribal council.
Yeah. Like, she made it known, like, yeah, I would take Mike out, but you know, he's on the option. So I got to, you know, do something different. And mm-hmm. how can she really be blamed for that?
Yeah.
You know, when they're doing the exact same thing, I don't know how well she'd do in another season.
I think she'd be fine in another season. Who's coming after her?
Yeah. I mean, she was barely shown on the show and she just wasn't really forefront for most people. It was the Mike show. It was, you know, Dan Foley's show and Will and Shireen battle. And she really wasn't up there with those people. Okay. But that's a good thing for her.
All right. Well, let's get into the top 9. All right. Who's number 9, baby?
Well, it's probably somebody who we all remember as most likable and most deserving non-winners from seasons foregone, who gave us some pretty poor showings when the person came back, and it's Colby Donaldson.
See, Colby, I'm surprised that Colby is so low on the list. I think that Colby Donaldson 1.0, I think that probably, I would imagine, be pretty high up on the list, considering he didn't get a ton of votes. He won a lot of challenges. He got a lot of votes in the end. Why so low for Colby?
So Colby was kind of a wet rag, in my opinion. He gets 9 votes throughout the season, which is actually
against him.
If I'm looking at the people who were in the finals, Colby got one of the highest numbers of votes throughout the season mm-hmm. compared to other people. That's probably because he was a threat and because he was a strong competitor.
Yeah. Well, he gets 5 at the merge from Kucha at that point. That's right, a big chunk of those.
That still brings into the fact that you're not getting votes if you are on top of your strategy and you're making those good relationships. People aren't voting for you. Mm-hmm. So clearly, even though he was a threat and he probably just warranted those votes, if he is making the connections that he needs to make and in with the people that he needs to be in with, which, I mean, I guess you could say that he was since he made it to the finals, he probably doesn't get those votes. He probably could have steered those votes in a different direction and made the other people think that he was willing to vote out somebody else so that he didn't bring that heat on himself. Especially because back in the day, votes mattered, you know, in breaking ties. Mm-hmm. So you really didn't want to get votes back in the early days of Survivor.
Yeah.
Okay. But other than that, he wins, what, 6 immunities? One of the top, for sure. Like, that's an amazing thing, amazing feat. He really loses points when, during his final tribal council, I was so upset that he let Tina win. That just really doused the game that he had played.
Well, to me, the thing that I always say with that is I don't think he cared about who was going to win. I really just felt like that he was just like, I'm going to be a rock star, famous person. I'm going to be an actor. I'm not going to bury Tina here. I'm just going to do whatever I can do to sort of just remain as sort of like the likable America's hero.
Yeah, like he really stuck to that perception, and instead of kind of being willing to break away from that in a strategic sense during the final tribal council, like he was like, oh, she's a nice person, she's a good mom. He didn't go after her like one little bit about her, you know, not being in on strategy or not being somebody who was really doing a lot out there. I don't think that he even brought up so much the fact that he was such a powerful challenge competitor and he was such a strongly aligned person within the game. Like, I don't think that he articulates that in a way that makes people want to vote for him. Whereas Tina really does play the mom card so well here. She really has that Southern charm and that likability factor that made people want to vote for her.
She's a game player. I mean, I think that Tina is going to be a strategist no matter what. I just think that Colby's playing a different game. He's trying to win the game of become a famous guy in Hollywood after this show is over. And it's hard for me to kill him on, you know, his jury performance and all that stuff when he's just like, it's just a different game at that point. Like, he's playing to become, you know, a guy who is going to be on TV shows after this is over. I don't think he cares about the $1 million that you get for this.
Right. He's high enough on the list, whereas the people that are above him do a much better job of convincing people to vote for them and having a pretty decent, compelling record to go along with that convincing argument in the end. That's why he's as low as he is.
Poor Colby. Can't catch a break anymore. He's only number 9 on the list of the greatest losing finalists.
Is there a chance we could see him again?
I think that he's done with the show. I mean, from what I've heard, you know, through the grapevine, I think that he did not love the way that the show featured him the last time through, and I think that he's probably done after this.
Probably for the best.
Okay. But I would guess that Colby is probably 40. I think that I feel like that I may have seen that maybe on Instagram or something like that. But let's go to number 8.
Number 8 is somebody who, if she's going to be on the list, I don't think that she comes anywhere near this number. Maybe towards the bottom, if on it at all. And that is our One World cohort, Sabrina Thompson.
Sabrina Thompson. Okay, so I thought it might be Chelsea when you said One World. So why is Sabrina ahead of, or I'm presuming ahead of Chelsea? So why is it her here and not Chelsea?
Chelsea does not do a good job in the Final Tribal Council. Compared to Sabrina, they were very similar, but I had to, when I was looking at them, I was like, okay, let's think about everything that they said. Who was better here? Who had the better case? And I think that was Sabrina. I think that she articulated it better. I think Chelsea was very young. Mm-hmm. I think Chelsea, not so much of a fan of the show, or didn't have much working knowledge of things. And that hurt her in her speech. And in her gameplay, even though she played, and then that's the second thing. she played second fiddle to Kim. So whereas I don't think the people who were going to vote for one of those two were never going to vote for Chelsea.
Now, hold on. Doesn't she get like a vote from Troyzan because he's being totally bitter also?
Chelsea does not receive votes in the finals.
No, Sabrina, that she gets a vote. Like the votes that she gets, the two votes that she gets, I feel like is from Troyzan, and then he makes Leaf also vote for Sabrina as sort of like an FU to Kim.
Right. When we're talking about Kim, we kind of have to talk about Chelsea because they were so closely aligned.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, if I remember correctly, kind of asked her, you know, what was different about her game? What did she do by herself? And I don't really remember there being much of an answer there. I have to imagine if I'm giving her a two. She certainly did not try to bury Kim. Kim was her, you know, BFF forever. There was no way she was going to go after her or Sabrina for that matter. And that unwillingness cost her in that aspect. And then compared again to Sabrina, she gets, you know, two more votes during the time on her stay there than Sabrina gets. So there's a couple factors there that makes Sabrina a better candidate in the finals than Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say that Chelsea's probably better liked than Sabrina at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some factors there that makes her pretty good. Again, I don't think that Sabrina should have cracked the top 10.
I agree. Yeah.
Even the top 15, I think she's probably towards 17, 18. If she stays on here, I'm not interested in seeing her play again really all that much.
You didn't vote for her for second chances?
You know, certainly I would have maybe had her over someone like that I didn't have a lot of working knowledge off of, like the Turtle Woman, which is what I call her.
Who's the Turtle Woman?
I can't even remember her. It's so bad. I can't remember her name right now. She just played. Like she's that... Who was it that was going? Who was going up against the one who switched? No, there's no way that she's flipping. She didn't flip. Rob, help me out here.
Kimmy.
Yeah, there we go. Kimmy. Yeah.
Why is Kimmy the Turtle Woman?
Didn't she was wearing like turtle earrings and a turtle necklace, and she was just turtled out. Okay. She's like the new Ninja Turtle. I don't even know what her name would be. Kimonello.
She was
too much for me with all that turtle wear.
All right, well, let's get our top seven. All right, who's number seven?
So number seven is someone I think is pretty well regarded in the game. I don't think for me he would have made it this far, and that's our resident pop star Chase Rice.
He got a lot of votes at the end. Here he is.
Did.
Yeah.
But Chase, he was so boring in my
Buzz
opinion.
Back.
Like, I live in Virginia, but I don't prescribe to or prescribe to any of those country notions.
Yeah,
was he a one hit wonder? Is he still
no,
doing?
No, I think he's a big deal. I think let's get weird with Chase Rice. I don't want to show how ignorant I am in terms of what I know about not just country music, but basically almost any music. But no, I think he's still a big deal. And, you know, he sort of like was a doofus in the pre-merge where he's sort of like hanging out with Shannon Elkins and is sort of like getting duped by Brenda. But then he sort of like falls in with Holly and Jane. And while I feel like he does not ever really have like a lot of agency, as the live feed correspondents like to say, in terms of like making the end game of Survivor Nicaragua happen, you know, he's pretty good. He's likable enough, but I think he's just sort of like wishy-washy when it comes down to, you know, being up against Fabio in the finals. And Fabio's just so likable, hard for him to overcome that.
It really is. I mean, he gets one vote cast against him the whole season. He does moderately well in the final tribal council. His alliance score is moderately well again. He's part of everything. He gets four votes in the end, which is impressive. He does have the idol
that Nayanka gave him.
But he's playing second fiddle to Sash. Sash, which is so funny because like they're both sitting here and Sash doesn't make the list, but Chase is so high, you know, because of his votes that he got in the end.
Yeah.
And that also speaks to, you know, what kind of games Chase was playing for that particular jury. You know, and we're not, talking about Survivor Hall of Famers or, you know, the
the best of the best. Like, he, compared to what was going on in Nicaragua, he did well. And he was well enough liked. He got a decent amount of votes. He won no immunities. He did have the idol given to him, but he wasn't a driving force in the strategy, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I don't think that he articulated very well how he played the game or what got him there. I think Sash does a much better job, although Sash has more negatives against him in the end, in his final tribal council speech. And then they both are outshined immensely by Fabio's personality, his willingness to open up to Nayanka, to be a great person, to be kind of the person who kind of did no wrong because he was working against them. Mm-hmm. He was the force working against them, and they couldn't get him out, kept winning immunity. He was a likable guy. He cried. He won. That's why he won. I'm
trying to take a look at the votes that Chase gets. So he gets four of them. So he gets the Holly, Jane. Brenda, I think Brenda votes for him, and Alina, because she kind of hated Fabio for no reason, and so sort of like a mixed bag, not a mixed bag of hammers, like Marty brought up talking about Chase Rice.
that's another reason why you have to appease the jury. Like, he brings up that question, and he's like, okay, if somebody's going to get this award for being dumber than a bag of hammers or whatever it is, who's going to get the award, and it can't be me. And of course, he's like, well, you do, because you should say yourself.
Right.
You should be, it's me, because, you know, I should have worked with you and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's appeasing somebody. And that's making somebody walk away feeling much better than they did when they walked up there. And he was unable to do that.
Look at Chase Rice now. He goes from being the seventh best losing Survivor finalist to never needing to take another phone call about Survivor ever again. So good on Chase Rice.
I
never has
Fabio.
To know what care. Rob has a podcast is or anything like that. And then I always say that's when you're winning.
Yeah. that's when you're really part of what's really important in life.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Once you get outside of this ecosystem, then you've made it. So congrats to Chase Rice. All right. Number six. Who's that?
All right. Number six. And I got a lot of flack for this at RahapCon I have not seen this season. Let's start there. I can't. I've tried. I need to try again. Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yes.
Kelly, bless her heart, you know, she does well. She gets three votes.
Yeah.
She does abhorrently awful in the Final Tribal Council compared to Rich.
Not good, yeah.
However, she does do well throughout the game and kind of being the part of the group that's getting there to the end and playing with Rich and that stuff. I'm fine with Kelly being here. I know that she's kind of thought of as somebody who is a great player in how she played the game, at least maybe before Second Chances.
Yeah. Well, tell me, hold on. So go back a step. So why are you so anti-Survivor Borneo?
I'm not anti-Survivor Borneo. It's just... It's a different show. It's very drawn out, and I need excitement. Like, I'm a Pisces. I need excitement and big moves. And they're sitting around the campfire talking about like the most innocuous things that just like bore me to tears.
Mm-hmm.
Tried watching it, not very hard. I need to go back and rewatch it and see how Rich managed to do what he did.
Yeah. So at what point did you start watching Survivor?
I started watching Survivor in season two.
Okay, so you came in the second season, and then...
But I was like 7 or 8.
Okay.
So my lens was definitely colored through, you know, my childhood of who I thought was good and who I liked. I think that some of the people I like are probably still the same, but who I think is good has definitely changed throughout listening to this podcast and watching more and really delving more into... the social dynamics and how people relate to each other. I'm a psychology major. I'm a senior. So like, it's really important to me to like recognize in somebody else, like all the things basically that Aubrey did and Sydney as well, you know, being able to spot somebody who's coming after you or who's talking bad about you. Like, those are the things that I'm looking for when I'm watching and like thinking like, oh, they did great. Like, that's awesome. And then I'm like excited by the fanfare of like fireworks at Tribal Council or somebody pulling off a brilliant blindside or, Mm-hmm. So my viewership has changed, which is why I've started to go back and watch. I watched 5 and 6. Again, I need to watch, 7 through 12. And then at that point, I remember a lot better. I had a lot better understanding of how the game was working and who I liked after probably towards China.
All right. So Kelly Wigglesworth, I mean, she is a vote away from being able to win the game. She only loses 4-3. She does win a bunch of challenges in the home stretch. She does rack up, some votes along the way, I guess. But yeah, I mean, she was right there. I mean, it really comes down to if you believe that Greg, it came down to picking a number or he was going to vote for Rich all of the way. If that's the case, then hard to find where that fourth Kelly Wigglesworth vote was going to come from. So I think that she's probably in the right spot in terms of people that could have potentially won the game that they were in.
Yes, people who did well in their season and are a strong finalist. She is, for her season and how the game was played back then, she certainly stands up to that. Richard was just a step ahead in the game aspect, mm-hmm. and where it was going.
You know, she was Mike Holloway before Mike Holloway, where it was like they just wanted to vote her out from forever, and she just, won all the immunities down the stretch.
Right. Who knew? Where'd that person go?
Yeah. I don't know. All right. Top 5, baby. All right. Here we go. Who you got?
All right, starting the top 5, and yeah, this is probably pretty accurate. Do you have who is your guess at who number 5 should be?
Well, I'm just trying to think of the people off the top of my head who I think we have to get into that we haven't talked about. Just to go through, bouncing around, I'm wondering if, we have a Parvati from Heroes versus Villains. She's got to be in the mix here. We had, though, the first Amanda Kimmel. I feel like we have to think about the second Amanda Kimmel has got to be somewhere in the mix here in the top 5. You know, you brought up Spencer at the top of the show. I'm wondering maybe if he's in the mix here in terms of going back to Cambodia. I don't know. I don't have a pick for the top 5, but there's definitely people that are on my radar.
So number 5, and I'm sure this person would kill me if they heard my list, because he's the best of all time. The game is flawed.
Yeah, that's very good. Russell Hance, Samoa, not Heroes versus Villains, I presume.
That is correct. Russell Hance 1.0.
I should not even be on the list. I should be the winner of Survivor Samoa. Okay. Russell Hance, of course. Now, I think he's going to get some votes cast against him along the way. He gets 2 votes in the finals. I believe he gets Fincher and Shambo. They're the only people on the jury that weren't bitter. he gets the 2 votes there in that spot. So talk through Russell Hance 1.0.
All right. Russell, clearly we know that he does a great job in Samoa. He finds the idols. He's not only controlling the game, he does a brilliant job at getting to where he's trying to go. And in the process, only garnishes 2 votes against him during the whole season, which is amazing when you think about how dislikable Russell is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear from people who have played with Russell that he can be quite charming. So, you know, he's out there telling people about Hurricane Katrina, being a firefighter. And, you know, do people buy into that? Is that why he's so likable? Like, who are we? And we're watching an edited version of this and seeing behind the scenes and how kind of grimy he is. But he's winning all these people over some way, so that has to give him a little bit of credence there.
Yeah.
Russell's biggest downfall, of course, is his social game is god awful, atrocious. It's not even there. It's completely abstained. It's absent. I don't know how somebody such a big fan of the show and strategy could have gotten this so wrong and just really thought that just by bulldozing his way there and kind of being the strongest person in the game, how that warrants a vote. These are people that you're dealing with. Although he does very well in the game, he doesn't deserve to win because he doesn't have that.
What did you think of the final Tribal Council performance from Samoa?
It's awful. Like, it's not first. It's he makes some good points. He's able to display his perceptibility and knowledge of how he did the things that he did, but He does not appease the jury. He does not apologize.
No.
Give them any good reason to say that they should vote for him, except the fact that he played the best game. Like, this is a game. She did nothing. I brought her to the end. Mm-hmm. Like, she was my little rag doll I dragged all over the island. Like, that's not how you win somebody over. Like, Cass should have been on Survivor, you know, 17 or something, and told him, or I guess 18, and told him to read the book How to Win Friends. And
yeah.
He doesn't get it. Like, he just, and it's so sad because he comes back twice more and still does not get why he lost the game. Even though he says the game is flawed, he doesn't understand that, okay, the game may be flawed, but if that's what the game is, and I need to play the game, not what I think the game should be.
I like when he is telling Natalie what she should be saying in her speech. I like when he sort of like goes over that with her. That's a fun part of that finale.
I mean, he is fun. He is exciting, and he probably deserved a couple of votes, you know, just based off of the merit of his game. But he burned people and made them look so silly and so small. And he just said, ha ha, like, well, that's the game. The game is to outwit you, and I outwit you. But you outwit me in a way that was unnecessary. And he doesn't get the fact that it was unnecessary to do what he did.
But he was a legend.
A legend in his mind.
All right. Let's go to the top four. All right. Who you got?
Number four on the list is probably exactly where she deserves to be, and that's Amanda Kimmel 2.0.
Okay, Amanda 2.0, above Russell. All right, so what was the major difference between the Micronesia Amanda and the China Amanda, which was tied for number 15 in the rankings?
So Amanda plays very similarly throughout
the Because the jury games. Performance has got to be similar, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're back-to-back. I mean,
yeah.
She doesn't get a break from the game, and that's probably ultimately what might have cost her the game, is the fact that she didn't get a chance to reflect.
Yeah, she didn't get to watch it either.
No, she doesn't see the confessionals and what people think about her, and she doesn't get that insight knowledge to know what she needs to change.
Which is the same for Russell, too.
Except, I think Amanda could tell by the line of questioning, and I think Russell probably could too, by the line of questioning that they're getting at the Final Tribal Council, and what people are telling them they should have known, that they did not do as well as they thought. And if they were getting those points against them the first time they were playing, and people are telling you, you didn't care about my feelings, you broke our friendship, you treated me badly. Okay, well, let's change that the second time you play, mm-hmm. and try and work against those things. Even if you think you still won, or even if you think that your game was impeccable the first time you played, there was points that you're given, at least in Final Tribal Council, where people are telling you that this is what they think of you, and they didn't listen. They didn't hear it. They didn't read between the lines, and they didn't follow through on changing those things.
Hey, at least she got closer her second time. Russell got further away the second time that he played.
and rightfully so, because Amanda, if you look at her posture, even in the Final Tribal Council in Micronesia, she's sitting up straight. She's proud. She's smiling more. She's happy that she's there. She's proud of the game that she played. She is completely willing to accept fault for the game moves that she made, and she is rightfully able to deduce what happened in the game and got her to be where she's at. And I don't know that Parvati necessarily should have won over Amanda. I think that they were... I'm trying to stay away from being dragged on Twitter.
Yeah, watch it. You're getting close.
I'm not saying that that Parvati should not have won. I think that Amanda was right there with her. Mm-hmm. The difference between them was some of the moves that she did and being able to curry favor with more people. She had a stronger relationship with those girls that she brought over and included Amanda in that alliance than Amanda did. Amanda was kind of brought onto the alliance by Parvati. Mm-hmm. And then from there, they both kind of strategically maneuvered throughout the game, leaving those fans kind of just doing whatever they said. But those were Parvati's girls. Mm-hmm. So her taking those people further into the game really benefited Parvati more than it benefited Amanda. Although clearly if they got to where they are, it benefited both of them. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, being a part of the Eric blindside, well, I don't even know if you could call that a blindside.
I think you could call it that.
I think he would probably call it that. I think the rest of us were just like, duh. Really hurt her because he says that, you know, I saw you as a big sister. You were somebody I really thought I could trust in this game, and you screwed me over. Like, you know, there was no need to do it that way. Like, you could have, you know, not been a part of it, whatever. The fact that the jury was privy to watching that, I don't think the jury appreciates when people do moves like that. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she took more the blame than he did, than Parvati did for being so close to him. Like, I'm not exactly sure what went wrong there. Was it a jury of 7 or 9?
I think it was more than 7. It might have been 8.
Might have been 8. Was that the
weird
5,
season? 3, 8. Yeah.
Yeah, so she was right there. And I think that, you know, it could have just as easily been a tie. Like, that would have been weird, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, that would have been crazy.
Oh, whoa, that's wild. I think that she doesn't get any votes cast against her the entire season, which is a feat in itself.
Mm-hmm.
She finds the idol. She has a strong alliance leading the charge with her femme fatale, you know, Black Widow brigade. She wins the 2 immunities. She gets 3 votes in the end. Amanda is really strong in Micronesia, and it's really just a point of personal relationships and where you stood with people, I think, more than who necessarily was doing what. Because I think, again, she was the one creating those friendships with people, and then Amanda was kind of putting things together. But Amanda, as compared with Todd, was also creating friendships with people, and I think that's why she won over Amanda this particular season.
Okay. Now we're at the top 3. Here we go. All right. Number 3.
Number 3 on the list is Rob. I have a lot of honor and integrity.
What?
And I think I should have won this season.
Wow.
Sure. I'm not sure exactly why Sophie beat me. Benjamin Coach Wade 3.0.
Coach 3.0. Wow. This is breaking news here. So, all right. Coach 3.0. All right, explain this to me.
Coach plays a good game. He gets 0 votes throughout the entire thing, even though he comes in as one of the returning players.
Mm-hmm.
They should have recognized from the beginning that they needed to take him out. Certainly, he is at the forefront of the alliance. He is taking a lot of heat. He's making the moves. You know, Albert and Sophie were probably the brains behind the operation, but I think that Coach was viewed in the season as the person leading the charge, which is an important distinction, because it's not just what we're seeing, it's what people are believing out there, and I think that people thought that Coach was in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He gets the 3 votes in the end, he wins an immunity, he has the idol, and I think that out of all his times, like, this is the point where he's most broken down to be real. Like, he's a lot less classic Coach, and he's more of a real person. He's talking about, like, how bad he wanted this, how bad he tried, how, you know, what this means to him, things like that, that play a lot better than just thinking that it's owed to you because you're a returning player who got to the end, something of that nature. He didn't play that card. He just talked about, like, how he got there and the moves that he had to make. And ultimately, I'm not even sure why Sophie beats him. Like, he probably should have won over Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
I like Sophie personally. I prefer Albert to Sophie in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Really, because he's more flashy. He's more villainous. He's taking the idol from Brandon. That's my style of play that I prefer to watch.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you.
You know, he does a good job, and I think that he does warrant his spot there. And I don't think that he necessarily deserves to be number 3, but mm-hmm. certainly top 10. I would put him in the top 10.
Well, I think the biggest thing that he tries to do is, I basically think he tries to run the same exact playbook that Boston Rob does back in Survivor Redemption Island. Whereas in Redemption Island, Boston Rob sits there at the end with Natalie and Philip, 2 people that nobody in their right mind could honestly give a vote towards. Coach sits there with Sophie and Albert, who are people that, you know, you would have to at least consider giving your votes to. So he's already screwing that part of it up. And I think that he did a bad job of freezing out Savaii from Upolu. Like, he sees Boston Rob do this whole thing with the buddy system. And I think that Savaii all ends up going to the jury with a real bad taste in their mouth about, you know, that coach didn't give them a fair chance post the merge. And I think that because that they looked at him as being the person who didn't give them that shot, they say at the jury, coach isn't going to win. And so, not taking anything away from Sophie, but I think that that's the reason why there's a lot of animosity towards him. And I think the reason why it goes to Sophie over Albert is because of, you know, Sophie ends up, again, with this very compelling pitch at the end of the game, among other things that she does well along the way.
Yeah, and again, she's willing to drag coach in front of the jury and be like, no, like, he was a little girl. He wasn't making the moves. I was making the moves. This is how I did it. I think that Sophie's one downfall, you know, regardless of her winning the season, is her emotional connection to the people. She was seen as cold mm-hmm. and distant.
Yeah.
So that could have definitely worked against her. And he should have used that to garnish favor from the jury, but he didn't.
Yeah. And Sophie also had the presence of mind to sort of like have the foresight to see how this was all playing out and shutting down all of Albert's not so great ideas that he has along the way. She's like, no, trust me. Trust me. Let's play this one out. This is going to turn out good. So don't show, you know, let's not change this up too much. So, wow. So
don't screw it up. Yeah.
Yeah. So where would you have coach if you were going to do some sort of like a, you know, organic rankings of all this?
I think that the first couple are probably correct. Coach, for me, probably falls below Russell and Chase, even Colby. And I think he falls somewhere between Colby and Carolyn.
Okay.
Or right. Mama C.
There you go. Coach would be pumped up, though. No, he gets top three. All right. So
that is only top three.
We're down to top two. All right. So I feel like I know what the top two have to be, and then it's just a matter of order. And I here's what I think they are, and then obviously you'll let us know. I think one of them has to be Parvati, as I mentioned earlier, and I think the other one probably has to be Rob from All Stars. I think that's probably the order. And if I had to guess, I'd say probably Rob is two, and Parvati is one. But you tell me, all right, what do we got? What's number two?
Okay, so number two is, in my mind, probably where they belong. I think that the top two are so divisively, like, interchangeable. So it was hard for me to kind of put this together. But anyways, the top number two person goes to Queen Parvati Shower.
Okay, number two is Parvati. Interesting. Okay. All right. So what did Parvati do right?
Parvati did everything right, in my opinion. And she was somebody who did a lot of moving and shaking. She was seen as a reptilious person. Throughout most, you like that, reptilious?
Yes.
She, from the get-go, people wanted her out. And that's important to note because she overcomes such a huge target on her back. She works with somebody who she didn't have any knowledge of, which is a huge risk in the game, to go to town and go to battle. She pulls off, of course, one of the most epic, you know, idol plays in the history of Survivor. And she is a manipulative and very smooth operator within the game. Mm-hmm. She has, you know, two idols during the season, three votes at the end, three immunities. She only gets four votes cast against her. And she is a force. Her final tribal council is very convincing. I don't think that she got enough credit. In the end, I love Queen Sandra, you know, Slay Queen. Mm-hmm. But I think if the heroes weren't bitter, Parvati should have won.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she gets 4 votes.
Yes. Now, in saying that, they're bitter against her, and especially, I believe, Candace is saying, I can't in good conscience vote for you because you stood with Russell, and I saw you in this abusive relationship. That was Parvati's mistake. You know, she should have alienated Russell more towards the jury. She had, you know, all the tribal councils that they went to start planting seeds within the jury as to that she wasn't working with Russell as much as they might have thought that she was, or she wasn't under his wing as much as they thought that she was.
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes down to the fact that, you know, the heroes banded together, probably behind Rupert, and were like, you know, yes, Sandra, you make sense. You know, you were there. You did, you know, survive. You were able to come up with strategy that we just weren't willing to listen to. You had the right ideas, and we didn't give you the time of day, and we're sorry.
All right.
You know, if she doesn't have Rupert's vote, and somebody brought this up to me, and I don't remember who it was, but they were like, if Sandra goes home instead of Courtney in that vote, does Courtney win the game? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Courtney does not win compared to Sandra in the end, because Sandra had previous relationships that Courtney didn't, that ended up working out in her favor, mostly regarding the Rupert vote.
Be careful. You might get dragged about that, too. That's one of the top 3 most popular players on Reddit.
Who, Rupert?
Courtney.
Oh, I love Courtney. Courtney,
well, you better.
Courtney is probably like my spirit animal when it comes to Survivor. Like, I love how sarcastic she is. I love when Frosty's talking to her in the final tribal council and she's like, I dressed up for you. Like, I just love how, like, her persnickety she is, and how she is just such a quippy person. I love it. I love all of it. I love New York attitudes. It's great.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, that's the difference in why Parvati didn't win, and I think that we all are aware, like, how strong she was and how strong her showing was throughout Heroes versus Villains.
All right. So Parvati is number 2. Who is number 1, the greatest losing finalist in the history of Survivor, according to the Azrael Rose system?
All right, so I have a hot take here, Rob.
Yes.
But I tricked you a little bit.
You tricked me.
I did. I left one person out on purpose that I wanted to talk about a little bit separately.
Okay.
And so as the system stands, number 1 on the rankings list is Ozzy Lust.
Oh, old Ozzy. Okay. So the greatest losing finalist in the history of the show. All right.
Correct.
So let's...
Now, if I put Boston Rob back into the system,
yes,
whereas I took him out and added Stephanie and Susie, Boston got a 9.0. So he ties with Kelly Wigglesworth.
Okay. So why did you take him out? Because he won?
No, I didn't take him out because he won. I took him out solely for the purposes of bamboozling a little bit. And I didn't want it to be too obvious who was going to take the title here. And I'm surprised that you never thought to mention Ozzy's name a little bit there.
Yeah.
I don't personally agree that he was the best. Certainly his social game is lacking. His arrogance and self-admonishment is... as high on the Richter scale as I could possibly reach. Mm-hmm. But that's what the system says. It says that he only had 1 vote cast against him this season.
Yes.
He does very well in the final tribal council. He wins 5 immunity challenges. He garnishes 4 votes in the end.
Yeah, I feel like he's actually not bad against Yule in that final tribal council. He talks about like how he was like a kid growing up. Like, I think he actually is like pretty fair in the final tribal council.
He is. He does a better job at exposing his inner self.
Yes.
And being able to relate with the jury a bit more than probably he played throughout the game. He didn't do such a great job talking to people and getting to know them and stuff like that. So I think that he talks about, what is it, his brother or his dad or
Yeah, I think it's his dad. You know, he ends up with losing, what, 5-4, and it's really only because Adam, like, Yule makes this promise to Adam about his vote. Like, if you get rid of Penner, I promise you, then, you know, you should, you know, I'll give you my vote in the final tribal council. And then he was going to get rid of Penner anyway. And so it was really like that he ends up sort of like stealing that one vote that would have been. So, you know, honestly, I don't have a problem with Ozzy being the person who is the greatest. This Ozzy, this game-altering Cook Islands version of Ozzy here, because it really did come down to that one vote, and it was a vote that Ozzy probably should have had anyway. So not to take anything away from Yule, but you know that it really that they Ozzy was dangerously close to getting the 5-4 win in that season.
Absolutely, and he was a very strong opponent against Yule. You know, it was. They really played two separate games. Ozzy played on challenge wins and being a well-admired person. I'll use those words. Whereas Yule played a much more calculating game. He played the strategic element of the game. So they really come from two different backgrounds and played two very different games and just happened to be sitting next to each other. And like you said, it just came down to a coin flip almost, like on who was going to take the season. They both deserve to win for very different reasons.
Yeah.
Wow. But neither one of them. I think, you know, if we're looking at a more well-rounded player, clearly that's going to be Yule. But that doesn't necessarily mean in that season that he deserved it over Ozzy.
So congratulations to Ozzy. Let me give you that list one more time. All right. So is Boston Rob get included in the final list?
Yes. Yeah, so we're going to edit a little bit, and we're going to start number 20 at Nalia Dennis.
Okay.
I think that the list is a pretty fair assessment of kind of where people fall as far as what people look at.
Yes.
I would take those. I would take Steven, Sash, and Dawn, as well as probably Spencer Bledsoe, who does not make our list.
Yes.
He tied with Albert and Monica Culpepper.
Yeah.
At 25.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably take those four people in replace of the four that I mentioned. I don't know where they would be exactly, but certainly I think that they played better. Just in comparison to the other people who played on their seasons, it just didn't work out for them.
All right. Well, I commend all of your analytical work that you put into this to make this podcast. So I do appreciate that. We'll see if we have another losing finalist to add to the mix in Millennials versus Gen X, which I think we should be getting closer and closer to that cast announcement. So keep a lookout for that. All right. So do you have a hashtag for this list?
I do. What did I say? Reptilius?
Reptilius. Okay. I was worried you were going to say hashtag Dirty D.
Oh, no.
Okay. The very Reptilius list here of the 21 now most best losing finalists of Survivor. All right. So, Azrael, do you have a Twitter you want to give out?
Sure. You guys can drag me on Twitter. It'll be fun.
Okay. What is it?
I'm willing to talk, you know, talk shop with anybody. Let me know what you thought. Let me know what you think. We'll talk about what's going on in the coming months here. Maybe you'll see me in the coming months. Who knows? Hashtag. It's at underscore Schmanthony.
Yes.
And that's S-H-M Anthony.
Yes.
Or you can just search my name, Azrael Rose. On there, you'll find me that way as well. I don't really use Instagram. I'm not going to add you on Facebook because that's weird.
All right. Well, great job once again. We got so much Big Brother coming up this week as well. So stay tuned for that. Plus, I believe we have a bonus Big Brother as well on Friday night this week. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast to get all the shows. Go to robinswebsite.com/iTunes. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.